Lord of the Flies by William Golding, Coward McCann, New York, New York, 1954. The type of work is an ideological adventure novel that takes place on a deserted tropical island after a nuclear war. The principal characters are Ralph, a likable, sensible boy of 12, Jack, a cruel, power-hungry, red-headed youth, Simon, a skinny, shy, thoughtful 9-year-old, and Piggy, Ralph's intelligent friend, a fat boy with thick glasses. Ralph wandered out of the tropical jungle paradise. "We're going to have fun on this island," he grinned. The blonde boy turned cartwheels on the sand, while his friend Piggy, pudgy, thick-lensed, and asthmatic, looked on. "I can't move with all these creeper things," Piggy stammered, picking thorns from his plump, bare legs. A whole load of schoolboys had been jettisoned on the island before their plane crashed. Ralph was confident his father would rescue them. Piggy wasn't so certain. Ralph found a large conch shell in the lagoon, and Piggy urged him to blow it. Boys soon scampered out of the jungle toward the sound. One, tall, red-headed Jack Merridew, arrived, leading a procession of soldier-like followers. Jack was disappointed when the others elected Ralph their leader. Still, he went off with Ralph and a thin boy named Simon to explore. From atop a mountain, they recognized their isolation, but also a chance for adventure. On the way down, a wild pig crossed the path, but the boys were unable and not quite willing to kill it. Jack promised, though, that the next time he would stab the animal for meat. Jack soon set about making good his promise of meat. On all fours, smeared with clay to disguise his scent, he sniffed the warm, steamy pig droppings and stalked his prey. Ralph, on the other hand, using a lens from Piggy's glasses, built a rescue fire on the mountain and started a project to erect shelters. But the other boys tended to enjoy Jack's fun and games more, and soon began following him on his hunts. The conch became the symbol of order in the boys' meetings. Holding the conch conferred the right to speak. Even Jack was convinced of the need for order. "We've got to have rules and obey 'em. After all, we're not savages, we're English." All the boys looked forward to a heroic storybook island quest until one little boy with a mulberry-colored birthmark on his face began telling about a snake-like beastie he'd seen in the woods. From then on, fear reigned, especially among the younger boys, the Litlins. Jack called them all batty. Yet, using their terror to his advantage, he often alluded to the unmentionable thing that lurked in the forest. Time passed. The heat of day and the cold dread of night began to overwhelm the Litlins, who often cried hysterically. The Biggins began forgetting their childhoods altogether. Over the months, friction mounted between Jack and Ralph. Jack became more violent, breaking one of Piggy's lenses and leading hunting parties of ever more filthy and cruel boys. Because it was a chore to keep the rescue fire lit, the boys abandoned it altogether. Ironically, just weeks before a ship passed. Ralph scolded the hunters. They should have helped him instead of playing games all the time. Meanwhile, Jack's words and deeds became primitive and savage. He would often reenact his hunts in a game. Making pig-dying noises, the tribe in swelling excitement would pretend to kill a pig, represented by one of the Litlins. Ralph, with Piggy and Simon as his only friends, felt more and more isolated. He blew on the conch to call a meeting, still hoping to organize for survival and rescue. "Things are breaking up," Ralph explained. I don't understand why." His voice trailed off. Then Piggy took the conch and asked, "What are we, humans? Or animals? Or savages?" When Jack interrupted, Ralph shouted, "You're breaking the rules!" "Who cares?" Jack responded. Ralph answered, "The rules are the only things we've got." But Jack no longer heard. "We're strong. We hunt. If there's a beast, we'll hunt it down. We'll close in and beat and beat and beat." And doing a deranged dance, he raced with his hunters into the night. "Blow the conch," whispered Piggy. "If you don't blow, we'll soon be animals." But Ralph didn't blow. His command was finished. The next morning, two boys urgently roused Ralph. They had seen the beast, they said, on the far side of the island. Led by Ralph, the group approached the beast, a dead pilot hanging from the entangled cords of his parachute. But even after showing them that there was no supernatural beast to fear, Ralph still found the filthy, tattered boys siding with Jack, the hunter. Finally, lonely and afraid, the chief allowed himself to give in and follow Jack, too. He even made the decisive blow in a boar hunt. "I walloped him properly. That was the beast, I think," he gushed. Afterward, in the savage dance, they all reenacted the killing by striking at little Robert. The game quickly got out of hand, and Robert went down, sobbing. Even Ralph wanted a handful of that brown, vulnerable flesh. The desire to squeeze and hurt was overpowering. But Ralph soon regained his senses. Homesick and tired, he again competed with Jack for the role of leader. Sensing Jack's unstable nature, most of the boys again voted for Ralph, whereupon Jack gathered his loyal hunters and struck out into the jungle to become his own tribal chieftain. Jack's boys stalked and killed a sow and her piglets. In an orgy of killing, they smeared themselves with blood and impaled the sow's head on a stake as an offering to the revivified beast. But Simon, the loner who had never believed in the beast and who frequently wandered off in the forest by himself, witnessed the scene with disgust. Later, in a trance, he conversed with the devilish fly-covered pig's head, calling it Lord of the Flies. The bloody head told him, "You knew, didn't you? I'm part of you. I'm the reason it's no go, why things are the way they are." In an echo of Ralph's earlier cry, the skull finally gloated, "We are going to have fun on this island." Awakened from his vision, Simon understood. He needed to warn the others. The only evil on the island came from inside themselves. On his way back, Simon freed the rotting corpse of the parachutist from its cords. The beast would be no more. In the meantime, Ralph and Piggy had painfully decided to rejoin the hunters. The boys had feasted and then were gathered in a circle around the fire. "Kill the beast! Cut his throat! Spill his blood!" The ritualistic chant went up. Amidst the gusts and thunderclaps of a storm, their bloodlust grew. Just then, Simon arrived. The tribe closed in on the approaching beast with their sharpened sticks. Soon, Simon's silent body lay in a heap on the beach. The next day, Ralph and Piggy moved to the opposite side of the island. In fear and nervous exhaustion, they dozed off. The fire, symbol of hope, flickered and went out. But at the other end of the island, Jack had incited his mob to believe the beast was somehow still alive, and the hunters prepared a massive lever-propelled rock for protection. The following morning, Piggy discovered his glasses had been stolen. Ralph now decided they must go and reason with the tribe. "I'll have to be led like a dog," Piggy moaned. Yet, carrying the conch, he rehearsed his address to Jack. "I ask for my glasses back, not as a favor, not because you're strong, but because what's right's right." The pair arrived at Castle Rock, Jack's fort. Suddenly, Jack appeared with a gutted pig and goaded Ralph to fight. "You're a beast and a swine," shouted Ralph as they came together. But Piggy, in a last desperate attempt to make peace, held up the conch and demanded to speak. "Which is better, to be a pack of painted Indians or to be sensible?" Piggy's answer came quickly. High overhead, Roger, with a sense of delirious abandonment, leaned all his weight on the lever. The giant boulder shattered down on Piggy, hurling him and the conch to the rocks below. Piggy's arms and legs twitched a bit, like a pig's after it had been killed, and then went limp. Jack stepped forward and calmly announced, "The conch is gone. I'm chief." Using an instinct that he did not know he possessed, Ralph fled into the jungle. Now he was the beast. Darkness fell. Ralph slept in a thicket. At dawn, the stick-wielding boys rushed, heaving stones and setting fire to the brush. The chase was on. "Think," Ralph commanded himself, but he was past reason. He shot forward, screaming, snarling, bloody. He forgot his wounds, his hunger and thirst, and became fear, hopeless fear on flying feet. Ralph sprinted for the beach where he fell on the sand, crying for mercy. When he staggered to his feet, there stood a white-uniformed naval officer gazing down at him. Seeing the little boys in the distance, bodies streaked with colored clay, sharp sticks in their hands, he spoke. "Fun and games. We saw the smoke. What have you been doing? Having a war or something? Who's boss here?" "I am," Ralph gasped. Jack, now a little boy who carried the remains of a pair of spectacles, began to protest, but changed his mind. The officer chided the children. Why had they not turned their predicament into an adventure? Ralph, unable to speak, could only weep for the end of innocence, the darkness of man's heart, and the fall through the air of the true, wise friend called Piggy. Everything about Lord of the Flies is thematic. The story revolves around a question. Is unshackled freedom a good thing? Golding's obvious answer is the need for civilization, its rules, laws, and expectations. Ironically, the nearly blind Piggy was the only boy who could see this most clearly. Yet, while Ralph personifies law, cooperation, and democratic choice, it is Jack's reliance on charisma, brute force, and authoritarian rule that wins out on the island. Chilling words from Golding's notes reveal the final irony of this book. The officer, having interrupted a manhunt, prepares to take the children off the island in a cruiser, which will presently be hunting its own enemy in the same implacable way. And who will rescue the adult and his crew?